Hey, Bert, what's up?
Hey, Rick, what's the address? I don't want you walking in front of my wrong door, guys.
114.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, how y'all doing out there today? Welcome to the Side Joint. I'm here as your host, Dennis Holmes. I'm here with my co-host, Sharon Mullen, the chocolate girl. How you doing, Sharon?
I'm doing great. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing good, man. Listen, we have a special guest in the building. We have a writer, director, actor. I want to say he owns his own business. Started from scratch. Took me to ATL for the first time. Most definitely, the people pronounce him as the next Tyler Perry. Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Watson is in the building. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? How are y'all doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. Now, you know, you've been in the stage play game in Philadelphia for a long time. You know, 17 years, you said you've been doing it. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Now, what made you write your first play?
You're taking me way back. The very first thing I ever wrote is like, I was at one point in my life caught up into the streets. And when being caught up in the streets, I had to do a little time. So when I did a little time, it gave me time to search who I was as a human being. And because I was raised by some great parents, went to Catholic schools, had a great education, all that, but God became a product of my environment. But when I was incarcerated, that's when I wrote my first script. The first thing I wrote was just these short skits. So I started writing short skits. And then while I was there, I wound up writing all my scripts. So the very first one I ever wrote as far as a full stage play, I think, was What's Wrong With My Family? Because I remember asking myself that at some point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, from there, what made you start going and being in theater? You know, when did you get it? Like, you know what? I'm gonna put this in theater. I want to start doing it. You know.
When I started writing, I wrote I don't know. I wrote about maybe 10 stage plays. I wrote about 8 movie scripts. When I came home, I had was in a position where I wanted to start doing stage plays, but I didn't want to do them on like what people were encouraging me to do, just a church or the rec centers and all that. I just wanted to do real theaters. So with me, I'm a visionary and I believe that, you know, God made me and I can do and accomplish whatever I want. So I'm never asking myself why I can't do something. I'm always saying how I can get it done. I look for that. So what made me get into it, the first theater I ever did was in Philadelphia called the, I just had it to tip my tongue. See, it's kind of early y'all got me up for this, so I'm going to blame it on the morning. I ain't blaming it on age. I'm blaming it on the morning. The Freedom Theater in Philadelphia, okay. Which is a very well-known theater, hold about 300. And what I did was I was a part of a church, so I started casting people from the church and things like that. And then I did it. Like I said, the first one was called What's Wrong With My Family. So that started my venturing into the first time I did it in a real full 300 capacity theater. So, and I loved it.
Okay. Okay. Now when I met you, you used to tell me this story about you worked at FYE and you took the method that you learned from working at FYE and put that into your business. Now, what was this method that you learned from FYE?
Well, to kind of set that up, one of the things I used to do when I wanted to ever do something, I always came into everything that I felt as though, because I didn't go to school for a lot of things after I graduated high school. So I always said that you can learn hands-on, because before with schools, they used to have a, you know, a system where you got to learn hands-on. So one of the things I used to do, I said, anything that in my life that I'm a part of has to be an asset to me. Even if it's a relationship with a woman, she has to be an asset in some aspect. We got to be asset. So when I worked at a job, when I went to FYE, one of the first jobs I had, when I went into there, I went into FYE with a vision to learn the business. So FYE was the lowest paying, I think, you know, it was a retail job. So I don't know what I was getting out, but I didn't care about the money because I was started doing showcases on the side. But when I did FYE, one of the things that I wanted to go into it with is I wanted to learn every aspect of what they were doing. So they had a program they used to teach us called, when you first get there, called the WINS program, W-I-N-S. And it's welcome, inform, note, and suggest. So when I wanted to learn that, then I used to look around and see why they pay people. Because in marketing, I found out businesses is like almost 70% of their money while they go into marketing. So I used to want to know why they pay people to come out to set up things in certain areas and this. So I was learning all that from marketing for the aspect of my company. So when I used to work there while I was doing showcases, I used to just try to be the best salesman I could and get all the information on how they're putting this together in here and why the store has so many different components set up. And every time they used to come to me about a raise, I used to tell them I don't want a raise. They used to think I was crazy. I used to tell them they can't pay me enough anyway. They're going to give me a 50-cent raise, something like that. So I never wanted to feel like this is the end of it and I got to fight for the little pennies that come. My vision always had to be bigger than what's in front of me. If not, then I'm just be into a dead end situation. So I would never even take a job. So with FYE, I learned everything. Most of my marketing strategies that I use is what I learned from FYE as of now.
Yeah, nice. That was nice. Now, another story you had told me back when I had first met you, which was about 10 years ago.
I should be charging you for this. This is a school that I took you to. Did you pay to send me a check, man, or you just...
I did. I said you took me to ATL. I came and met you that day.
That ain't give me no check. Oh, yeah, you did. You paid for your bus, so you did.
Right. Yeah. When I came and met you, you was like, the reason that I've chartered a bus and got people to come down to ATL to see my play, you was at another city. And you notice all these people from Philly was there.
Right. You remember that.
Like, you was like, you know what? If they, man, listen, I remember a lot of things people tell me because it would come full circle. And you'd right. be sitting there and you start to notice. And you was like, well, if y'all came from Philly to come see me, I might as well charter a bus and get y'all to come on down.
And that's what I did. Every city that I went to, because I started promoting myself, I did a bus that paid for all my transportation of my set, everything. The numbers I was just doing just to make it up and make up the numbers and gave half of the bus to the people just to fill up that part to pay for my travels. So with me, all I had to do was really just pay for it paid for the whole bus, tour thing. And so, yeah, that's what I did. You remember that?
Yeah, because I remember when I told you I said, I'm going to ATL, so I'm going to see the play, but I'm definitely going to Magic City. That's what I kept telling you. I'm definitely going to Magic City.
Yeah, a lot of y'all went to Magic City. Everybody left their wives home and went to Magic City.
Yeah, it was a couple of us in there. I was like, y'all going too? Like, yeah.
Wasn't Sharon working there at the time? No, that wasn't Sharon. It was. See the look she gave me. Being quiet to her questions.
Magic City? No.
I'm totally joking, y'all. Don't nobody. I'm just playing. I'm sorry, Dennis. I just felt like messing with Sharon for a minute.
That's okay. That's what we do on the side, John.
See, Dennis, I try to help you out because I didn't want you to be the only one. I was in Magic City. But go ahead, Dennis. I'm sorry.
There was a couple of us in there. It was pretty deep, but I had a great time, man. I was like,
John Canada Terrell, the one that played Flash in the Five Heartbeats, he was in the play. He was there.
Yeah.
He was there. I don't know if Tony
and Terry. I didn't believe. Somebody told me when I got on the bus, they was like, you know Flash from the Five Heartbeats here? And I'm like, as many times I watched the Five Heartbeats, that ain't Flash. And I'm like, that's not Flash from Five Heartbeats. And
then he looked the same to me.
Right. Well, once I paid attention to see
that
is Flash.
That is Flash, yeah.
I was like, that is Flash from the Five Heartbeats. Wow.
Yeah,
and that's your movie, Dennis. That's your movie.
What I'm saying. That's my movie. I didn't watch that movie.
And you was folding up. Yeah,
it's crazy. We even in my family we do Five Heartbeats trivia. So the fact that you had him and Big Red in your play, was crazy.
When I did the barbershop, yeah, Big Red, because he when I talked with him, he had told me he wanted to not be in the same. Look, cause everything he's was doing like that. He was so known for that mean way. So, and he was telling me he wanted to do something different. So I said, we're gonna do barbershop, man. It's totally give you the leader of the barbershop for the community, all that. People loved him, gave him a standing ovation. Also, yeah. I can't believe 25 year olds knew who he was. Any restaurant we went in, everything, everybody like Big Red. I'm like, yeah. Wow, y'all remember Big Red. And he don't even mind. I love his personality because I only work with actors that really got good personalities, because I got a brand that I don't want nobody saying, well, he was with Rick Watson's show. Now you got to be cool. Got to have a good personality. Cause ain't none of
us. How did you meet those guys though? You got John from True. You got Orange Juice Jones. You got Flash from the Five Heartbeats and Big Red. How did you meet those guys?
I've been in a lot of companies. Like, it's funny how I get to meet them. The way that I get to meet most of them, I've always been in a position where, I was in events or different things where celebrities were, and I always had by me building a brand, I'm getting invited to a lot of things. So they say, Rick Watson, send him out here to Cali, send him to here, send him to there. So I network a lot. And when I go to events and parties, you can have people at parties like Puffy do big parties. I've never been into the Puffy's, but that people do different things, and I'm there, so I start networking. I start pulling in, and then I don't like going through managers, so I want to meet you personally and see if we can work out. So some of them I have to go to their manager and go through it, but overall I meet a lot of them in person. And a lot of them come to me, like even when Christopher Williams came to me one time, he's one of the ones heard about me, and some of them come to me. And I was at one of this guy named Big Sky had his big parties thing in Jersey, and I ain't even know how they got my number after the time they called me. I'd be like, hey, it's Christopher Williams. Yeah, or different one of them's called me. A couple of them called me. I meet them through somebody. So it's always, I'm always in the right positions just to meet celebrities. And I'm always looking for them to work for me. I'm not looking for them to meet them. I'm looking for them to work for me because I got to build my brand. So build my brand off of the people that have a brand. So that's how that's I get
good.
To meet them. Yeah.
That's good. You also have a mentorship program where you're teaching people, how to see their vision and how to go after it and,
right.
Teaching them how to write stage plays and act and things like that. Now, what made you start that?
Well, when I used to do that, I used to just want to just touch the communities because I always feel like we're in a position where, the country itself is made to, and this is no disrespect, because I don't like to be a radicalist, but we don't have resources, and they make sure of that. It's not a coincidence we're not in any malls. It's not a coincidence we're not in any shopping centers. It ain't like we're equipped enough to do. And it's not a coincidence that they make alliances with everybody else, so they're not going to deal with us. So when the Jews come here, they're going to give them money for places. And when the Asians come here, they're going to take care of it. So one of the things is that I used to research, and I knew about like stuff like in 1921, the Black Wall Street. I don't know if you never heard of Tulsa-Homa. Black people got together with their pennies and put together a great force. And nobody in this country made more than the money was getting made in Tulsa-Homa. Nobody out of the blacks. They was borrowing. We had the biggest banks. We had the biggest airports. We had the biggest schools. We had everything. They were borrowing from our banks. And then they allowed them to just come in one day and just terrorize it and then take it all away and destroy it, burn it down, and then and the government just let it happen. And then they build all the highways and went across all the black cities. That's why black cities are real rural and so many, because all the highways go past it. So I understood what the mindset of it was. And when we understand it, I felt like, though, it was because the Bible says much is given, much is required. So for me, I felt like it was my duty to put myself in the position to encourage and tell people. It's one of the reasons I'm starting a talk show called Winners Are Made, bringing different celebrities, community leaders, and all on it to just tell about different things that can help them effectively. Because, so it's, you know, it's real out here that you know, it's just, you know, it's real out here that I had to understand. What made me start is because I realized white people never invented anything, and that's no disrespect. They invented the patent shop. So when black people were inventing everything and doing everything, they would just put it out like they did. Alexander Graham Bell got 1,000, I think, inventions. Imagine that. So, you know, even when we started doing scrapples, all they would give us, and we made scrap from food, and they took it and put that on the market and stopped giving it to us. So everything is set up the way it is. You know, you got to understand, that's why it's real no American dishes. White people didn't cook. No disrespect, but we cooked. And they made dishes from us. So what's a real American dish? It's our dishes. So anyway, all those assets, not to try to go into nothing too political, is why I put myself in a position to say that we got to find a way to be here for ourselves. So whatever God allows me to have in my path, I feel encouraged to make sure I encourage somebody else to do better. So that's what makes sense.
That's great. That's definitely great. Sharon.
Uh-oh.
Is this the handout?
Is this the handout?
Tagging me in?
Uh-oh.
All right.
We all tagging. Tagging her back out. Cause I might be in trouble with Sharon.
No, I'm trouble.
Okay.
No trouble. I'm tame. I promise. You're tame. You. But you know, your story is quite a redemption story. I love a good redemption story. Someone who's been through some things, got some stripes on the back, you know. So you've been through some things, but you're an overcomer, yes. Right? Mm-hmm. Takes a special kind of person to be an overcomer and overcome adversity in the manner that you have, okay? So we may all know people who have been incarcerated or, you know, has had run-ins with the legal system or whatever. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give those out here who are listening today who has fallen on some adversity and they really want to make something and do something with their lives, but they're not quite sure how to do it? They're discouraged. They feel like, because I've got this felony conviction or because I've had any kind of conviction or any type of strike against them, or they don't have the financing, or they just feel very hopeless. What would you say to encourage them, or what advice would you give them?
Well, the first thing I say to people is that, you know, we're programmed to think ways. Everything that we do, we're programmed. So what I encourage people to understand is that you ain't a failure as long as you got another shot. Nobody has literally failed if you can get up and do it again. If you got another shot to get up and go do something, now you ain't did nothing with your life and then you wind up going away and passing away and everything, and then you can see yourself. So the first thing is that don't let nobody tell you a failure. You know, that you have to understand, I always encourage them to understand what it is. Understand that, and this is something I say a lot, is that success is a state of mind that motivates progress. That's all success is. Mm-hmm. Success is not based on how much you have. If you can get sit up and do anything, whether you got no money or you got some money, if you're going forward on something, then you're succeeding in aspect of that. When you fall victim to the system or the narrative that's around in our communities with the guns flooded in them and the drugs flooded in them and the politicians don't want to talk about that, and you get caught up into becoming a product of that, like I've done it myself at times, then you're allowing yourself to go on a path of failure. But all you have to do is literally turn it around. Like people always listening for something particular, but it's literally just a state of mind. Just turn your mind around to say that I want more for myself and I'm going to get it. And then what you have to also do, I encourage people to always appreciate where you are. What people do a lot of times in business and things that's in front of you, paying bills or doing other things, you get yourself in a position where you feel like you just want more because we live in a capitalist country. So it become about the bag more than about its moral value. So when you start feeling good about what you're doing and accomplishing something, got a roof over your head, because contrary to popular man, we don't know how to be starving in this country. But the country puts in our face so much fabulous stuff that we feel as though we're not nothing if we don't do it. You got a roof over your head and you got something you started. So you have to change your whole mindset, I encourage people, and understand that the greatness that's in you. Because if you can't see the greatness that's in you, then you can't be great. So that's what I encourage people.
That's good, good. And I can tell just by talking to you in our pre-show and looking at your Facebook page, you are a big family man.
Yes.
Big family man. So how does the concept of family and your passion for your family, how does that drive you in what you're doing as far as being an entrepreneur in your entertainment company and so forth?
Well, I think being a parent, it comes with a responsibility. I was very fortunate to have great parents, which is a good example for me. You know, that ain't the only reason why, because I know some people didn't have parents and they're still doing great things. But for me, I think it's a responsibility that comes with being a parent and a lot of sacrificing. So for me, the motivation comes from these are my seeds and I need to be in a position to show them different, because they were young when I went away. So I had a chance to bring them into a different mindset, a different thing. I wanted to let my legacy or my passion, my essence of them be it. So when I was, I lived for them in essence. So for me, I push forward all the time to try to put them in a position of understanding better and seeing better, because a lot of times we're human beings and you can be a spiritual person, but a lot of times you want to feel and touch something. So I want to, so they're my motivation. And I always wanted to make sure that my parents' last thoughts of me before they passed away wasn't that me being in trouble and being a product of my environment and all the hard work that they did for me, because I was blessed to have both parents, was null and void, you know. So that was all, that's part of motivation of mine, being a family.
Well, Kobe Bryant is one of my favorite, all-time favorite athletes, basketball players ever. Kobe Bryant. And you all know, you've heard of the Mamba mentality that he always talked about and that people are always remembering. How do you demonstrate Mamba mentality in your life?
Let me make sure I understand Mamba mentality, because I'm not a big Kobe fan, so I don't listen to a lot of
I can explain it to you. It to Mamba me. Mentality means you give it your all every day to be the best version of yourself that you can be without quitting. Every day. You bring it your all every day.
Well, one of the things for me, I kind of had a feeling that might be what I wanted to be, right? But for me, I just think that I made a statue in my house, like that I put it, that I made up as a black man head, and I put a plaque in front of it that says success is within. So every day I go out the door, I look at that. What I do is I always just encourage myself to understand you have to change your outlook of what society projects us to be. And it's a reality in that, you know, we're not, you know, looked at as this. That's why they made black. So black and white. So if you go to a application, I don't know why you have to put that on a job application, because all you should need is your qualifications. So we understand that it's a stigma and it's a thing. Well, even in the dictionary today, it still says black is dirty, dirty, evil, desolate, lazy, all these other things don't have nothing to do with color. So in that, I have to say myself every day, I just take it on that I am the best that I can be. And if somebody's going this hard to make me look like less, then that shows me even more than who I am and what I am. So I literally take on a thing wherever I go and do, and anything I see, I can do that, or I can have that, I can do this. So for me, that's how I take it on. I take it on is because, you know, for me to go out every day, I think of nothing else except for I'm the best. Like, I don't think nothing else in myself. So it's like a programming thing. You thought, it's a thought process. That's why I always say success is just a state of mind and motivates progress. You know, because all you do, it motivates your progress to go out every day. And I guess me and Kobe had that in common, because I'm definitely the Mamba, I guess, in my mentality, if that's what it's called, the Mamba. So yeah, that's my aspect on it. Yeah.
Who is the NBA player that you really like?
Well, I'm old school. I think the greatest, one of the greatest and underrated players is, he's not even in people's top five or top 10 starters, is Julius Erving. One of the reasons about Julius Erving, because he was a man of class, and then, but he was a humble dude, and I ain't that humble. I'm humble, but I got the killer instinct like Kobe and Jordan. But what I liked about Julius Erving back in the day, Julius Erving was one of the most dominated forces in the field. He's the one that created so much that you see now and other actors from all the great players. Like, he started that. So I used to watch him, but I watched also, I had to learn, because I used to try to have a temper and something ain't going my way, I think I got to attack everything. So he taught me to understand when I pay attention to people, you know, how to do that. When it comes to the power force of conquering everything you put your hands on, I have to go to Jordan, Michael Jordan. So, and then as far as like football, why I loved football was a guy named Randall Cunningham staying for Philadelphia. And it seemed like I'm staying on Philly team. But Randall Cunningham was a guy that came to lead them. He came and changed the whole dynamic of football for me. He made me love football over basketball. And it's because of his style, grace, and his just dedication to being the best. So, you know, I mean, all those things as far as sport players have played a part. You know, that's about okay. it.
So let me ask you this question. What, where do you get your inspiration for your stories, for your plays?
It's funny. I think that's one of the reasons you can't copyright a title or concept, because all writers tell the same story. I tell all writers, because some writers think some are better than them and all that. I always say that all writers in their own right are, you know, good at what they do, because we all tell the same stories. We tell it different. What inspired me, my stories, is we only write what you considerably familiar with. So my life just inspired. Just like I went into, I wrote my first two, I mean, if it's okay to go into that, I wrote my first two philosophy books. And the reason I was inspired to do that, because the pandemic was down, and then I wanted to understand that, you know, so many small companies and people are going, you know, or people not believing in themselves, and they're so much, you know, dependent on the jobs that they're sitting home doing it. So I wrote a book called The Deprogramming of a Failure Mindset, which is a business book to encourage people to change their thought process of making their self their security instead of keep leaning on somebody else being their security. And then I wrote one called The Deprogramming of a Failure Mindset. These are all just written this year and on Amazon. And that one is to encourage people to understand the narrative of why we're in the position of thinking of ourselves the way that we are. So far as like each play that I wrote a play called Your Girlfriend Need to Mind Her Business. That's why I wrote it, because she need to mind her goddamn business. And I wrote
What about the male friend? Does he need to mind his business too?
Women always taking up, that's the problem with women. And I'm getting ready to do a series on this, why women can't submit to men. Because y'all can't. And most of it is because of your nurturing nature, because y'all always got our best interests at heart, but y'all can't be right all the time. Just think of that. But anyway, not going into that, because I knew you was going
to. No, I agree. We're not always right, and we talk too much.
Thank you. Okay.
We do.
Time. I'm glad this is being recorded, because I'm going to play this back for every woman I know. So anyway.
Yeah, we do. We talk too much.
Women pick up for themselves so much. Now, as far as men minding their business pretty much good. We kind of mind our business. We're not really like going to jump into your thing. I'm talking about the girlfriends. Like my homie or my friends, I've never seen experiences where that the guy got into his friend's business with him and his girl. That doesn't happen.
I've seen it. Well, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen as often. Right. And nothing is absolute. So I agree.
That's absolutely right.
I agree.
So when I wrote the particular one, I couldn't find enough scenarios to write your boyfriend or your boyfriend need to mind his business. I couldn't find it. So that's why I didn't write it. Now, when I write plays, though, every play I've ever written, I always balance it out, because I found out that most plays do to men, because women are the ones that mostly go to the plays. So I noticed men beat up on men in plays all the time, all the male writers. And one of the things I do in my plays, I always balance it out. I never keep it as like the woman is bad or the man is bad. I always balance it out. I have a play called A Woman's Worth. That does the same thing. I got a play called Secret Lies of Betrayal. I got a play called, I got so many plays, Letting Go Can Be So Hard. So it's a lot of plays that I always try to, my narrative and my productions is to be something to encourage both sides. So I never try to attack. Now I show the bad side, like this one I got called For Better or For Worse. Oh my goodness, this guy was all over the place. But at the end, it's another scenario because realistically, in life, and don't take this the wrong way, but women are more diabolical than men. Now, what I mean by that, women know how to get away with it. We're dumb and don't know it. So that makes y'all more diabolical. If y'all want to, we'll never know unless y'all want us to know.
Never know.
So that's some diabolical stuff. That's why Adam and Eve was in trouble. That's why Adam and Eve was in trouble. The woman couldn't submit. Adam sat there and talked about, let him talk that woman, talk him into it. Oh, with that woman you sent me. No, don't be talking that. So, you know, women got their ways. And I love y'all, though. Don't get it twisted. Y'all good, but y'all got some stuff. Y'all got a fake thing called a woman's intuition. So I know it's not true because you can't know every time. So, you know, that's
That women's intuition thing is real.
No. Have you ever been right every time you had that intuition?
I wish my sister was watching. I wish she was watching, because if she was, she would be able to comment in the comments. Yes, I have. I have been right. Every time it's been truly my intuition. Really, it's not an intuition. I don't like to use that word, but yeah. What I call it is my gift of discernment.
Now that,
it comes straight from God.
I like that.
It comes straight from God. And there's a difference between the intuition and the discernment that I feel. I do have women's intuition. And no, that is not always correct.
Right.
But believe me, my gift of discernment is right every single time. And when I was younger, before I knew what to do with it and how to use it, I didn't always listen to my gifts. And I didn't pay attention all the time. And that's when I would make the poor decisions sometimes. But, you know, when you know better, you do better. So I do better with that now.
I appreciate that. I appreciate
But you would find, talking with me, you would find that I'm very honest about women and men. Very honest about it. I love men. I'm raising a son, or I have raised a son, and I am a supporter of men and women. But I am not going to sit here and pretend like women are always 100% right and bash men, and men are the devil and they all hate us. I'm not going to do that. Now, there's a whole lot of sexism going on in things, entertainment business, sports business, podcast business, private business. There's a whole lot going on, and yes, I will call that out as well. But
definitely, I call that out. I mean, I feel as though everybody I work with, I make sure that if they want a man, they're getting fair, equal things, and that is there.
Yeah.
And the only reason that a lot of women are really considered a lot of things tuition, everybody's been damaged. So I understand women are more emotional, men are more sensitive.
So we are more emotional, and yes, you guys are more sensitive, and most men will never say that. So I appreciate you saying that because it is true. Because
if something come, we only gonna snap when it's like right in front of us, like, oh, what? But women, y'all will think everything is like, it's funny. But I, like we said, we love both sides of it. But you know, you should keep it real. That's the only way that you can ever coexist, if people get it real. That's why I can't keep nobody in my life, because I'm too straightforward and honest. And as one woman told me, I was really honest. I said, no, you're just not used to people telling you the truth.
Right.
So you're so used to everybody saying what you want to hear.
Right. And I'm similar to that in my way too.
I can tell.
You can tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could tell because you're level-headed, you know. Like my thing in life is I'm not looking for nobody to make me happy. I'm looking for somebody to be happy with.
Right.
Difference.
And always tell me the truth. Difference. Mm-hmm. And always tell me the truth. Be truthful with me.
The truth.
Because if you're going to tell me the truth, even about myself, even if I don't like it and don't want to hear it, Then I know you have my best interest at heart.
Yeah, you have your best interest at heart.
So shout out to my sister who always tells me the truth. And shout out to my friend, Trisha Joy, if she's watching, because she always keeps it real with me.
Why am I cool now with your background? You done took my palm trees away and you got a cold background. This is kind of cold. Now I feel chilly. What's going on?
The Bay Bridge, you know.
Oh, that's the bridge.
I'm going to be honest with you. The reason why I changed it is because the palm tree was moving. And I don't know. Dennis will tell
you. It was distracting.
With things moving, I don't know. I'm an old woman. And I tell you, things moving on camera just don't go well for me.
Just don't go well for you. I'm glad the water not moving.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, if the water was moving, I would not have this background up. No. No, sir. But I wanted to ask you before we let you go. I know you have to go in about 8 more minutes. I just wanted you to tell everybody the name of your entertainment company and what kind of things are you working on currently?
My name, my company is called World Renowned Entertainment. My brand is Rick Watson, so that's my website, rickwatsonproductions.com. I'm working on several things. Right now, in August of 21, we're going to start touring my new film called Mother's Love. It's a crime drama. We'll be touring that to at least 8 cities through the AMC theaters. So we're doing a red carpet in every city. We're in a position where we're not going to put on Amazon as of yet because we want to kind of get through the city. So it should be on Amazon the beginning of 2022. I'm also going to go back to wanting to tour my play that I was doing, also trying to fit that in, called Barbershop, starring Big Red from the movie The Five Heartbeats, and a whole cast of other celebrities. And I'm in a position, I'm doing a play here in Philadelphia that has been on my heart to do for a while here. And I wanted to give it a big bang start off, just at least do it in Philly for now, just to see how the people absorb it. It's called Surviving the Storm, because we all need that spiritual lift at times to be, you know, how to get through some things. We all
peace be still. Peace be still. Yes. The wind and the rain.
Right. So my books, I'm still touring, doing book signings in cities we haven't done yet. My two books that's out now on Amazon, one is called The Deprogramming of a Failure Mindset. And these are philosophy books. I was in writing since the pandemic was going on, and they're out now and doing well. Actually, The Deprogramming of a Failure Mindset is becoming a bestseller on Amazon, they said. And my other book called The Conditioning of Black Self-Destructing Behavior, that's on Amazon. So I'm going to be touring and doing those two books, signings. And in between all of that, I'm doing a motivational speaking tour called Winners Are Made. We haven't set dates for that yet, but we want to do that. We want to bring a celebrity guest with us to host it and tour the cities and try to encourage people to be in a position of developing a winning mentality. So I think that's the gist of it. It may be more on me.
So will you please put Durham, North Carolina on your list of cities to come to?
Yeah, I really am. I'm going to make sure that I do.
Not Charlotte.
Yeah, I'm in Charlotte.
I'm sick of Charlotte. No, you need to come to Durham.
I'm going to come to Durham. I'll hold you up to help me get the word out when I'm coming to. So.
Well, you connect with me. I'll make sure the word is out. That's what I do.
That's what you do. So
that's what
I'm definitely going to bring. I'm gonna bring my film through there. I'm gonna bring the motivational speaking tour through there. Because, of course, you said I'm ready to go when I get back from this weekend. Because I'm have to get do some traveling now. And so when I come back, I'm gonna put it on the list. So make sure you
please
get my information from Dennis to make sure we stay in touch.
I will.
And we're gonna. I will. Yeah, definitely.
I already connected with you on LinkedIn, so you have to accept that.
And it's funny, I never go on LinkedIn. I got to start.
I know you don't. I can tell.
You can tell. Because I used to go on it a lot. So I'm going to go back into LinkedIn and make sure I connect with you too.
Make sure you accept that. But yes, please come to Durham, North Carolina, because Durham, we have our own Black Wall Street here. We've had it too.
Durham, that's what I was about to say. That's the other place I was going to tell you. I used to always say Raleigh, but I'm saying it was Durham. Durham had the same thing. Durham had the biggest bus companies and all that down.
We had the first black owned insurance company started here, North Carolina Mutual.
I can believe that. And they were just as big, I believe, as Black Wall Street, I believe, as Tuscaloosa. I don't know if it was as big, but it was big out there. And they blacks
lots
owned
of history.
And they did
lots
the same. I think they did the same thing in Durham. They did Wichita. And then they built all the highways.
It's definitely a market to hear from you in terms of both of your philosophy and business mindset books. So definitely put us on the tour. I will be your contact person for the Carolinas if you like.
So that's going to be the first thing I bring.
We can talk about that.
We can talk about that. I'm excited. I'm excited about it. Also, people can catch me on different things. I want to make sure they know my social media. In fact, my website again is rickwatsonproductions.com. I think on Instagram, I'm Rick Watson CEO. On Facebook, I'm Rick Watson. LinkedIn, I think I'm Rick Watson, I believe.
Yes, you are.
I'm going to start going on my LinkedIn more. and I used to love LinkedIn at the beginning. I just thought it was a good platform, but I'm always doing a lot. And a lot of times, like my assistant and them keeps up my Facebook and all that stuff. So I'm getting ready to get more hands on with a lot of stuff because, by me being, thankfully I'm busy. I won't apologize for that, but I do want to get in a position of getting my hands back on to touching things a lot, because instead of just being a creative side, I want to network more with people because I love people. So that helps. And Sharon, I want to ask you something. Why do they call you Chocolate Girl? Because you look like you light skinned it with.
People always equate chocolate with skin color, chocolate skin color. That's had nothing to do with it.
That makes sense then. Okay.
The person who met me, I met a person, randomly met this person. And after talking for 20 minutes, he said, I'm going to call you Chocolate. And I just he 20 minutes. And I was like, huh? He said, I'm going to call you Chocolate. He said, you just look like chocolate to me. Smooth like chocolate. And I was like, okay.
And it's funny because chocolate is all different colors too. It's a milk chocolate. It's
white chocolate, all kinds. And it stuck. And I mean, all my friends, we all knew each other. They all started calling me just Chocolate.
Okay.
And at the time, I didn't have a Twitter account. This is how long ago it was. I didn't have a Twitter. And we started doing PR for a local music organization.
Right.
And I felt like in order for me to be part of the street team, I had to get involved in Twitter. Had no idea what I was going to call myself. And so my friend was like, well, they call you Chocolate and you're a writer. So let's call you the Chocolate Writer. And I said, that's it.
I like that too, the Chocolate Writer.
So that's how, and then when I met Dennis, he just called me the Chocolate Girl. So that's it. That came from the song.
Now I got it. And it's funny how my stigma was in my mind as well, like chocolate, thinking of dark. I don't know why. But
everyone does that. Everybody does that. You're more like caramel. No, I am chocolate. And I love chocolate. That's what's so weird. We weren't talking about chocolate. I don't know how he knew, but I love chocolate. I mean, I'm a chocolate fanatic. And so it's just always, this was 9 years ago.
Wow.
And that's it. Even my karaoke name is Chocolate. Just Chocolate, not Chocolate Right, just Chocolate. So when people say Chocolate to the stage, here I come.
last thing I wanted to say too, we're always looking for people in cities that want me to bring productions to there. So they go to my website, rickwatsonproductions.com, and let me know what they want me to bring to their city after going on my website, looking over which production and all that. We're always looking for the voice of the people, so they can go there and also click on contact us and let me know that you want me in your city and what you want. And you can preview all the trailers of my work on the preview trailers. So I want to make sure I let them know that too.
And I got, awesome. Got two questions for you, and I guess we're going to have to let you go. First question I got is, after all this touring you've been doing, what is some of the top cities that show you the most love?
Pretty much all of them. I mean, every city I pretty much went to, people came out. So I don't want to come on hands and make one of the other cities sound less than another city. So I've been very fortunate and blessed. So all of them have been, and considering I'm just independent, considering, because the machine's not behind me, I've been very fortunate. I haven't been to any city and took a loss. So I've been very fortunate with that.
That's good.
So all of them. And like I was saying before, I think, and this is not talking about other cities are not as good, but one of the cities that blew me away with their talent for me to actually be there and really get into participating in things that they do is St. Louis. St. Louis is astonishingly very talented out there. I mean, the young ones to the older ones, and that was pretty cool to see. So it's a lot of cities I haven't had that chance to do it, so I'm not going to say they're the best, but they have a lot of quiet time since. So after Nelly coming, I don't know why more didn't come out, but it's a very talented city.
All right, and the last question I have for you, you have a TV show coming out. Are you starting your own network too, or?
Yeah, what our plan is to do is we've been thinking about getting the app, and for right now, we're just shooting a pilot, and then we're gonna have 6 episodes, because that's what you would need, even if you shop it or if you put it on somewhere. So we're in a position of just setting that up, and that's my show called Winners Are Made, which I'm shooting with my partner, Mert, because we have a company we have together called Real Wine. It's our new video company that we're shooting a lot and doing a lot of video work for artists and entertainers. So we're just setting that up to be in a position to be ready when we really wanted to explode out. We have an episode of it, I believe, on my website. The first one we did just to kind of let the people know that it's coming.
All right. That's good. Well, Rick, I know you got to get ready to get going.
Yeah. My ride is here and they give me the look like you're running late. They tapping the watch like this. Running late.
I want to definitely let you go, man. You know, I did this interview. I do a lot of these interviews to give people their flowers while they're still here. Let you know that we appreciate you and everything that you did. I definitely always going to appreciate you for taking me to ATL. You know what I mean? And yeah. That was one of the best weekends I had, and I still talk about it to this day.
Yes, wow. He does.
We mm-hmm. went to a party mm-hmm. afterwards. The biggest club out there and had us do an after party there. So we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
He needs to stay out of Magic City, though. He made the bus late.
Yeah. I ain't going to talk about that. But... It's been great meeting you. Great having you on the show today. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. I truly appreciate y'all. And y'all be blessed, because I do have to go. And I look forward to talking with y'all again. And hopefully you'll have me here again.
Yes, we will. You definitely will be on again. And tell everybody, God bless. Have a nice day. I can't say good night. Have a nice day.
Safe travels, Rick. Safe travels.
Thank you. Y'all be blessed.